there and welcome to this racing postcast. It's Monday the 6th of September. I'm Maddie Playell and this week I'm joined by James Stevens and Richard Forrestall, the Irish editor. We're going to talk about all of the things that went on over the weekend. There was fallout from the Group 1 Sprint Cup at Haydock, also quality action at Kempton and Ascot. Plus, we had Baïd's Prix de Moulin on Sunday. That colt remained unbeaten, the son of See the Stars, in brilliant fashion, making his top-level breakthrough. But before all that, in today's paper, there was an exclusive interview with Gordon Elliott, courtesy of our Irish editor, Richard Forrestall. Now, you won't need reminding what happened back in February when a picture was released of Gordon Elliott sitting astride a dead horse. He was then given a 12-month suspension, six months which was suspended for bringing racing into disrepute. And at the time, this was a huge case on the eve of the Cheltenham Festival. Denise Foster then took over the reins at Cullen Trot. But Richie, when you went down to see him, please just tell me what you found out and how this whole interview came about.
Hi, Maddie. I suppose the story came about... Look, we were all aware that he was due back in September, and I know there are people commenting to the effect that, you know, why is anyone interviewing him at this stage? But at the end of the day, he's one of the highest profile figures in our sport, and he was hardly going to just come back and no one ever talked to him again. That sort of thinking is kind of bizarre. So I had a chat with some of his people around Galway time, and then I spoke to himself a couple of weeks ago and I said, would you be interested in doing a piece with us? And he said he would. So I was up there last week and I sat down with him. I think the copy that's produced today in the paper and online on racingpost.com is fairly reflective of the conversation and the tone of it. He is extremely repentant. He knows he did an unbelievably stupid thing. He has never really shied away from that. He accepts that someone in his position in particular needs to understand the responsibilities that come with the profile he has. He realises he let everyone down. He realises he let the yard down and the sport. And he is extremely determined to come back and convince people that the picture doesn't, as he said today, the picture and the perception people have of him because of it, it does not portray the person he is really. There's one issue that has been, you know, conflated throughout all this is that there's some sort of a welfare connection to it. And I would say personally, from my own experience of Gordon and his yard, and I know he's adamant that there was no welfare issue here. What he did was unbelievably silly and crass and juvenile, but you know, he didn't harm the horse, and you know, that's something that people probably need reminding of. Like, he unfortunately racing's reputation got dragged through the mud because of what he did, but you know, he didn't harm the horse, and there's no question that any of the horses in his care are not given anything but the best treatment. So obviously there's a mixed response to it. You could say it's polarised to some extent, but I think everyone is entitled to a second chance, especially in a situation like this. You know, he's done his time. Was it an adequate ban? I mean, I wrote a column in the days before, you know, saying, you know, no matter what he got, everyone, there was no sanction that was going to prove satisfactory to everyone. And should he have got a year, which he actually did, his suspension was a year with six suspended. Should he have got 6 months? Should he have got longer? I mean, no one knows. It's a subjective viewpoint, sorry, that everyone is going to have. Personally, I thought they got it about right. I thought it was fairly proportionate. You know, he was left in no uncertain terms. He was, you know, it was, you know, a 6 month ban and a year a suspension, I should say, sorry, 6 month suspension of his license, a year all told, is a fairly significant deterrent, I think. So that's where we are. He's going to be making entries on Thursday, with possibility of runners on Tuesday, Punchestown or Sligo on Wednesday, and we go from there.
And Denise Foster, who was drafted in, responsible for the runners at the Cheltenham Festival from the stable, what has Gordon Elliott been up to during this time? Would it be fair to say he was overseeing the yard still?
he was certainly involved in and about the yard. I know he spent some time away as well. But, you know, my understanding of it was that Denise was very heavily involved and she was a very positive influence, a very decent person with fairly sound judgment. And she was a kind of galvanizing force around the yard. But was Gordon involved in the yard? Yes, he was, as far as I know. And, you know, as we know, he was active at sales and so on. But he has a business to run, I suppose. And, but, you know, he voluntarily stepped away from the racetrack. He didn't want to be seen in the public eye. He didn't want to be antagonizing the situation any more than necessary during his suspension. He didn't have to do that. And we see plenty of other trainers in similar situations who haven't elected to do that and, you know, aren't slow to kind of show their face, even though they might be suspended. So I think he deserves a bit of credit for that. You know, so that's what he's been up to. I mean, he's by today's piece, like, he's spent a lot of time thinking about the way he does things and the way he conducts himself. And I would imagine, you know, he'll be, shall we say, you know, thinking carefully about all his manoeuvres in future.
Not to draw conclusions or comparisons between these two events, Richie, but the IHRB and their handling of different issues has been in the news recently. Stephen Mahon, the trainer who was suspended for 4 years over neglect, that ban has been reduced by 6 months, we found out last week. Do you think this tallies correctly and cohesively with the Gordon Elliott's case?
No, I don't think they're remotely comparable, really. Stephen Mahon's case is a welfare case, indisputably. I mean, there were serious welfare issues unearthed at the yard. Gordon's case was not a welfare case, and there have been, I think, a dozen IHRB in unannounced inspections on the yard in the past decade, and a couple in the past year. And there has been never any concerns in that regard. So they're not related as far as I'm concerned. Stephen Mahon got hit with a 4-year ban. And as you say, 6 months, 4-year suspension of his license, I should say, just to be clear on that. I know we lazily tend to use the word ban, but suspension of his license. And on appeal last week, he had 6 months lifted. Now, some of that was on a technicality because one horse he was charged, sanctioned for twice. There was doubly sanctioned. And there was another area in which the appeals panel decided that the original referrals committee had, you know, erred, basically. And they accepted one version of events, but kind of sanctioned them on the basis of another. So they felt that had to be rectified by the appeal. They're not remotely comparable, Matty. I don't know anyone who would support Stephen Mahon's return to racing, whereas, you know, a lot of people believe Gordon Elliott is due another chance.
He lost his big flag bearers, the Cheveley Park-owned horses, the likes of Envoy Allen, Sir Gerhard, etc. What's the atmosphere like in Ireland? You spoke of the polarisation, and we often see that on social media. If you look at the response to the piece, some people are saying he should never train again. Some people are saying, you know, he deserves his second chance and he's very welcome back. Where do you stand on that? I presume somewhere in between. And what do you feel like the atmosphere is? And what do you think people are going to do when he does return to a racetrack?
It's hard to know, isn't it? I don't think there'll be any major drama here. I think, you know, it's been acknowledged that he's done his time, and I would be surprised if there was any significant hostility. To be honest, I'd be surprised if there was any hostility in England either. I mean, the National Hunt crowd don't tend to, you know, the National Hunt crowd tend to appreciate the good horses and so on, whether they're British or Irish. And I'm, you know, we see that at Cheltenham every year. So, I mean, if I'm right in thinking, you know, the question you're posing is, will you get a negative reaction maybe over there? Like, are we saying that when Gordon Elliott's going to have a winner at Cheltenham, he's going to be booed or something? I don't think that's likely. I'd be very surprised. You know, he's got to the top of his profession from absolutely nothing. He built it single-handedly. You know, the only man to challenge Willie Mullins, really, in the past decade. I think people appreciate what he has done and how good a trainer he is, and all the rest of it. So I would be surprised if there was a hostile reaction to Gordon Elliott returning to the racetrack in Britain or Ireland.
And finally, one question. Do you think he will be able to repair his reputation and build to be as big as he was before this happened? Do you have that belief in him? Do you think that's possible now?
Yeah, I think it is possible. Yeah. He was the biggest spender at the sales during the summer. That's all long-term investment in store horses. Look, he's lost some very good horses. It's going to make it very hard for him to be champion trainer in the next couple of years, probably, when you see some of the horses and the sort of money they would be earning throughout a season. It's probably going to take him a little bit of time to get back. But do I think he has the scope to go back to the very top of the game? Absolutely. He's done it before. There, you know, we've seen the sort of investment people are willing to put in him still. And that's ultimately what it always comes down to. You need the money to get the horses. You need the horses to get to the top of the tree. He seems to be getting them consistently again. So over the next couple of years, I think yes, he will be back at the very top of his game.
Thanks to Richie for his input there on that. But now we're going to go back to reviewing the weekend's action. We're going to start off with Haydock, where the ITV cameras were stationed, and the Superior Mile. Now, tactics were a theme throughout Saturday at Haydock. Front runners often doing exceedingly well. And the Superior Mile, first up, was won by Artistic Rifles. He was very well supported in the market, James. Could you see it coming?
I hadn't until I read, I think it was Tom Tegal who flagged him up. And as you said, it's one of those tracks, isn't it, where you can get away on the front. And blimey, he's been a really progressive horse so far, Artistic Rifles. I mean, interesting to see them now thinking about big races in Dubai and such. And it's been a really good season for Edward and his team since he's come in. And this horse has just improved and improved and improved. And like you say, when you get that run at Haydock, and it all goes right. It is a hard track to sort of run you down, but credit to the horse. It was an impressive performance there, and well, not the strongest of Group 3 races by all means, but he's going to be progressive, and like I say, he could even get a big pot over in Dubai.
I want to keep an eye on for the remainder of the season then. And similarly, the Old Borough Cup really valuable historic handicap went the way of Island Brave. I thought this was an excellent ride by Sylvester D'Souza for Heather Main. Early on, led, then headed and rallied in the closing stages. It was a real game win, but few made an impact from the rear. I suspect there's a couple who you think aren't worth giving up on in behind.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, it's nice to see Island Brave win the race. You know, he's been around for a few years. Heather Main has always spoken really highly of him, and it's always nice when you see these horses on the flat come around and have their big day. And as you say, I think I agree with everything you said about the way he did it. The Godolphin Horse Global Storm was the one I sort of backed for it. And again, just sort of not quite run his race. But he's one I'd still be one to keep on side. He's still, you know, sort of, I suppose, lightly racing the way he's had 14 runs. But he's still, to me, strikes me as a sort of handicapper who will land a big prize soon enough. He's probably the one for me. But yeah, it was an interesting race. Nicholas T, I thought, was going to get up there, which would have been, again, another big story. But no, a good race, and Global Storm is the one I'd be taking away from it.
And in the feature, the Betfair Sprint Cup Stakes, the Nunthorpe form was given a considerable boost. Emiratiana, who was second at York to Winter Power, went on to win the Sprint Cup, beating Starman, the evens favourite, by just a short head for Andrea Azzani, who had a wonderful day, and Kevin Ryan. This horse, he's been something of a renaissance. He's had a comeback this year, winning at Hamilton. Of course, he won the Gimcrack back as a juvenile, but Kevin Ryan really seems to have found the key to him now, and that's been riding him slightly differently and letting races pan out slightly differently. He's very, very talented. Why do you think he was able to get the better of Starman this time around?
Yeah, I agree again with you actually there. The change of tactics we talked about after the race and how it's really brought the horse alive, as I think was the phrase they use. And I mean, Emiratiana, as we said, he's always been talented, and Kevin Ryan's always spoken about him in huge regard. I remember doing his stable tour and they were so excited about him and talking about the guineas at one point, and albeit he never stayed and he was never quite, I suppose, good enough over a mile. it's just that wind surger, it's gelded, it's a combination of these things, and they've ridden him promptly, and that's made the difference. And also he's come there after a brilliant run at York, and we know what sprinters are like. You know, they continue to run, they continue to hold their form, and it's impressive when they do. I suppose for me, it was disappointing to see Starman beaten. You know, we sort of spoke about before the race, and Ed Walker told us he was an equine version of Usain Bolt, but it didn't quite happen for him. And the way I still think he's sort of improving, I still think he's likely raced. I wonder actually if the ground was just a fraction too quick for him, whether he's a proper good ground horse rather than a good to firm horse. But that's the only sort of reason I can think of. But yeah, and the only other thing I would flag as well is Chill in third. I mean, what an extraordinary horse. I mean, I remember seeing this horse win at Bath or finish second at Bath. Last year, just through COVID, and thinking this horse would be one to follow. It won next time out, but I never thought it'd be a place at Group One level. But these sprinters, when they get going, they can really climb up the ladder. And I think that's something we should always remember. It's good to remind yourself, because following these horses through can often pay quite well.
It can. And Emiratiana, he was 5 lengths behind Starman in the July Cup, but as you say, got his revenge here after running twice down in trip back over 5 furlongs. Do you think the Breeders' Cup will suit this horse? Do you think he has what it takes to manage with that sort of competition and that kind of race? Very different to 6 furlongs at Haydock, that's for sure.
Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't be punting on him to win at the Breeders' Cup, to be perfectly honest with you. I think, just feel that the way the races go, it's all about being sharp and away. And I think just looking back through time, we've had a few good sprinters go over there, but a lot of the time it's hard to beat the Americans at really what is their own game. That said, Kevin Ryan knows what it takes, doesn't he? He did it last year with glass slippers, so it'd be interesting. It's a shame for Emirati Ali and Starman as well that it's over 5 and not 6 this year, because I definitely fancy their chances a lot more. But it's worth having a go over there, because I think he needs that quick ground, and he's not going to get at Ascot in October. So I wouldn't be surprised if we both go there and run well, but I would pick Starman over him.
Do you think he's more of a 7 furlong horse than a 6 furlong horse, Starman?
No, I don't. I just don't think he was fully at the races. I don't think he didn't look to the travel in that same sort of venom that he usually does. I mean, the July Cup all went so straightforward, and then they flicked the switch and away he was. Again, the only thing I can really think about is that the ground might just be a fraction too quick for him, and it might just be that good ground, just taking that little step backwards in sort of the speed of a race, might just help him out. But he ran his race, he just wasn't quite good enough on the day, I don't think. But he's definitely going to win more big races, and like I say, if I have to back them against each other in the Breeders' Cup, Starman would be the one I'd want to be on.
Fantastic. We're going to take a breather now, but don't go anywhere, because William Haggis had an excellent weekend. We're going to talk about 2 of his big winners at Ascot and Kempton.
Racing Post Members Club is the only subscription that includes access to the Racing Post digital newspaper every day from 9 p.m, plus exclusive premium content, including expert tips, analysis, form study tools, and more. As a listener of the Postcast, you can enter the code POSTCAST21, that's POSTCAST21, to get 50% off your first 3 months. Head to racingpost.com, click on subscribe, and choose Get Ultimate Monthly to get started. That's code POSTCAST21.
Let's go to Ascot next then. We're going to talk about the Lavazza Stakes. It's a 3-year-old handicap over a mile and 4, and this has a reputation for producing really smart horses. It's often a race to follow, and it was won by Her Majesty's Chalk Stream. William Haggis did train the 1-2 as Candleford was second, but there was a mix-up with weighing in and saddling, and the second place horse was disqualified. Nevertheless, the winner, his effort stood, and he's actually a full brother to Reach for the Moon, who hopefully we're going to see on Saturday in the Champagne Stakes. But Her Majesty often likes breeding these stoutly bred progressive horses, James, and this horse looks another in that sort of vein. He's just been relentlessly progressive.
Yeah, certainly has. And I think this horse is one that's improved for going up in trip, and I think that will continue, and I think he probably will get a bit further. I know connections discussed after the race is a mile 6 race around Art Weekend they're going to look at. I can't remember the name of it, unfortunately. But the race that I was looking at for this horse, and I know it won't happen now, but I'd quite like to see this horse in a Melbourne Cup. I think he just has everything for it. You know, he's got that bit of speed. He travels up there nicely. He's got obviously got a really big engine. And the way he finished that race, I thought he would stay that 2 miles very well. He'd travel into it and he'd finish as well. So a shame that it's going to be a very different Melbourne Cup this year. But I think he's that sort of progressive horse. And I think next year will be interesting to see what happens to him. He's already been gelded. So I think we can pretty much guarantee he'll be in training next year. And wouldn't surprise me if he emerges into a horse for races like the sort of Goodwood Cups, Lonsdale Cups, races like that over 2 miles.
And talking about the Melbourne Cup, this podcast couldn't go much further without talking about Prince of Arran. Now, he finished 5th of 5 in the Unibet September Stakes at Kempton. But this is a horse who's really brought some energy, at least from our perspective, to the Flemington Showpiece in the last couple of years. 3rd behind Twilight Payment in 2020, 2nd to Vow and Declare in 2019. And he just brought his best to that race every time he ran. 3rd to Cross Counter in 2018 as well. He's a real fan's favourite. So just give us your tribute to a wonderful Globetrotter who's really got Charlie Fellows' name out there as a trainer, James.
Yeah, massively. And I think that the Australians have really warmed to him, and they've warmed to Charlie as well, just they have with Tom Marquand as well. It's beautiful to see a horse go out and run his race in big runs and come back and go year after year. We don't see it as much as we'd like to on the flat, and we constantly sort of say it, but we need to credit the ones that do go out and do it year in, year out. And, you know, he's taken a young trainer to all these different places to give him experience. And I know he's not necessarily won a Melbourne Cup, but Charlie's been represented there. He's gone up to Dubai with his horse. He's gone to Hong Kong. Getting those experiences and seeing how training operates and how racing operates in all parts of the world, it's a massive... I mean, it really teaches trainers quite a lot. I hear them sort of discuss about how watching racing over there and how sort of training a horse differently and for different races is a big thing. And, I mean, I suppose the only sort of thing for Charlie that he'll remember is that, well, we say goodbye to Prince of Arran. It was only half an hour earlier we discovered another one that could be a real new flag bearer for him in Eve Lodge, who I was really, really impressive in the sprint race.
Yeah, that was the Serenius Stakes. Eve Lodge has been a real breakthrough this year. 16-1 sprung a surprise under Jim Crowley, but... She, by our dad, is hopefully going to go on to become a horse that can take Charlie elsewhere. But back to that September Stakes, it was won by Hamish for William Haggas. Now, this is quite painful for me to talk about, as I was on Hamish for the Ebor at about 20-1. And of course, he was a last minute scratching from that race. And he's gone on to win a Group 3, beating one of the most consistent horses around, who has form lines linking with some of the best horses we've seen this season. But Hamish, this was a very impressive effort, wasn't it, James? To win a race like this after such a long time away from the track, how good do you think he is?
It's difficult to say because I'd like to see him in a better race again. I know last year we saw him Royal Ascot and he didn't run too badly, but it was disappointing, I think, more than anything. He lost one of his shoes. He wasn't quite there. He wasn't quite good enough. But, you know, he looked a different horse this time around. You know, it was an impressive win and he's got real guts about him, doesn't he? I can see why you sort of like him in an Ebor race, because he just looks to have all that sort of grit and determination you need to win one of those big staying handicaps. I mean, I'd say he's similar to the other Haggas horse we discussed there from Ascot. He might be one that emerges into the cup races because he does look like he stays. We've obviously seen him over a bit further already, so we know he gets mile 6, but to be honest, I'd be pretty confident he'll get a mile 2. And I think that without going too mad, I think he'll probably win the Yorkshire Cup next year. So tipping already, I think. But yeah, he's a really improving horse. And like I say, Maddie, I'm gutted for you that you didn't get your chance to run for your money last week or 2 weeks
ago. Yeah, slightly not as far adrift. The Long Distance Cup, he has an entry in that race. He's around a 10-1 chance. How do you think he'd match up against the likes of Trushan, who he was only narrowly behind in a conditions race in October 2019 by neck. He was sent off the 4-7 favourites. So I think that's a really interesting matchup if we see these two great horses against each other again. And Stradivarius, we can't forget him, who we're going to see this weekend as well. How do you think he'll fit into that picture now he's another year older?
Yeah, as you say, I remember that race at Newbury, and it was absolutely bottomless ground at the time of year as well. Newbury can get very, very wet in that sort of late part of the flat season, and he handled it pretty well. I know he's beaten on the day, but we now know how good Trouchan is and how good he is on that ground. So that form possibly will be stronger than his Group 3 win, albeit in a conditions race. It's going to be interesting. I think by all means, they definitely need to go and stretch him over the two, and Ascot's going to be a good opportunity, you know. We look at and we judge sort of horses and how their form ranks, but we don't know what the ground's going to be like at Ascot in October. It's you know, how bad, how wet it is going to be, how testing it is. And we know Stradivarius, for all he is brilliant on his day, he doesn't handle it as well as Trouchan will. And he's going to be there to be taken a shot at. And you can't be afraid of Trouchan because we've already got so close to him. So Hamish would definitely be one of those good cup horses, and being able to handle that sort of ground, he seems pretty versatile. There's a lot to like about him, and I really hope he does land a big one, because as you say, it's gutting for connections to have a race in mind, to map it out and just not be able to turn up on the day. But yeah, interesting to see how we get on at Ascot, but I think he'd run very well.
William Haggis is going to have an exceptional autumn if things go to plan. His Baid enhanced his brilliant reputation even further by winning the Prix de Moulin at Longchamps on Sunday. And this horse has now been made favourite for the Queen Elizabeth II Stakes on Kipco British Champions Day, ahead of Palace Pier, the older proven horse. Of course, he would get £3 from that horse at Palace Pier last seen beating Poetic Flair in the Jacques Lamawa. So how do you compare the two, James, and who would you have ahead at this stage?
I would hope that they do the right thing with Baid and go to America for the Breeders' Cup. I just think that race would suit him far better than Ascot on that testing ground. I just worry whether he'll be able to show that spark we've seen. And, you know, we know the connections love having runners in America, so it's certainly looks like that would be a good option to go to. I think they're two very different types of horses. I think Palace Pier, sort of way he goes about his business, is really quite impressive. It's eye-catching. He moves, and that winning the Lockinger at the start of the season, you know, you wouldn't have questioned anyone toppling him. He looked exceptional. I think Baid's a bit more sort of a clever horse in the way, in the sense that he just sort of sits in. He doesn't need to do anything complicated, and when the question is asked, he can go. You know, the important thing about this race, and why I think the Breeders' Cup especially, is there was a real good pace from the German horse November, a real good pace. It was a properly run race, even for a sort of not massive field. So you know he's going to get a good pace over in America. You can sit him in and he can just turn the engine on. And that's what he did. I mean, it wasn't sort of like Palace Pier in the sense that he just sort of moves on the bridle and just... It's almost like in Lockinge, where it was so easy. He had to get asked, and it wasn't as sort of, I suppose, glamorous to watch or such, but he's a real knuckle down. He really got the job done. And my word, he beat some good horses in France as well. I mean, let's not remember, Order of Australia is a very good horse in his day, and to put a length and a bit away in between them is a fairly good effort. So I think Baid will probably be a very, very good horse, but whether he'd do it at Ascot, I don't know. So if those two matched up, Palace Pier for me, but hopefully Baid will win in America.
Okay, and we've got to remember, Baid's pedigree is pretty stout. He's a full brother to Hookham, who we were just talking about there, who was beaten by Hamish for William Haggis. And Hookham, you know, he's won right up to a mile six. So this horse could still be with more to give. How important do you think it is that we get to see him as a four-year-old?
Yeah, I think connections will probably be kicking themselves. They didn't manage to run him as a two-year-old, because that always adds for a lot more commercial value. And unfortunately, that's sort of the way the game is now. It's, you know, when a horse becomes a Group One winner, you start to treat them as stallions and stallion prospects rather than top-class racehorses. And that's the game we're in. That's the nature we're in. I think it would be important to see him as a four-year-old. But I mean, if he does go to Ascot or America and wins there, I think they will put him away and breed with him, because he'll be unbeaten and he'll still be that exciting horse. So I'd love to see him as a four-year-old, selfishly. I think if Palace Pier was to retire after Ascot, that might make them think about it a bit more, because, I mean, who would he take on in Lockinge, really? That's the big question mark. But, yeah, unfortunately, we live in the game where we sort of expect these horses to be retired after the end of the season. But fingers crossed Mr. Haggis can twist their arm, because I bet he'll be eager to have a four-year-old campaign.
I bet. Wouldn't that be fantastic to see? It'd be such a shame if we didn't get to see him again, because he's clearly still learning about the game and he's probably not reached his peak either. Now, we have a fantastic week coming up, James. We've got the Cazoo St. Ledger on Saturday at Doncaster. And then, of course, it is Irish Champions weekend at Leopardstown and the Curragh. The Irish Champion Stakes, the feature that we're going to talk about. So don't go anywhere as I'll get James's thoughts on those two big heavyweight races.
Racing Post Members Club is the only subscription that includes access to the Racing Post digital newspaper every day from 9 p.m. Plus, exclusive premium content, including expert tips, analysis, form study tools, and more. As a listener of the Postcast, you can enter the code POSTCAST21, that's POSTCAST21, to get 50% off your first 3 months. Head to racingpost.com, click on subscribe, and choose Get Ultimate Monthly to get started. That's code POSTCAST21.
Welcome back to this Monday Postcast. Now we've got top class action this week coming up. The Doncaster St. Ledger Festival getting underway on Wednesday, but we're going to skip straight to the big one on Saturday at 3:35, the Cazoo St. Ledger Stakes. Hurricane Lane has been a red hot Antipost favourite for some time. I'll run you through the rest of the market. We have Ottoman Emperor, a 7-1 chance. The Lone Eagle, he isn't going to run because he's been injured. He's out for the rest of the season. Mojo Star, slightly bigger at 8-1. Wordsworth for Aidan O'Brien, 14s. Sir Lucan, another from the Ballydore stable at 16s. Interpretation again, Salamarak and the Mediterranean, all around a 20-1 chance for that yard and 25-1 bar. Do you think this is going to be a walk in the park for Hurricane Lane, James?
I do have a funny little story about Hurricane Lane, actually. I was discussed him when he won his conditions race at Newbury with a friend of mine who's quite a big fan of a horse called Maximal. And no word of a lie, I said at the time, I think Hurricane Lane would be a St. Ledger horse. So fingers crossed, I might pull it off. Of course, I didn't have a penny on. That's why he's been so successful since. If I'd have put some money on, he would have missed the race, I'm sure. That's the unfortunate luck I'm having. I think he's the best horse in the race by miles, and I think it's a good St. Ledger. I don't think it's the strongest one, but I think it's fairly good. But the way he won in France before, blindly, that was impressive. And you're thinking this is an art horse more than a St. Ledger horse, but the way he sort of goes about his business, you know he'll sail a mile six without a doubt. I mean, that ground was very testing over there, so there's no doubts about the trip. I certainly don't think so anyway. And he's still improving. He's got the class. I mean, everything you could want in the box for the St. Ledger, he seems to tick. So I think he's got a massive chance. Aidan O'Brien will always be very well represented, as we can seen in previous years, and we can sort of rely on him for that. I think the Mediterranean for me would be the one I'd just be interested in. I think he's sort of improving. I liked his run at York last time, and I think Yibi is quite a decent horse. I know he's a bit below the best in the pecking order at Godolphin at the minute, but I think he's still a very talented horse. So he's definitely the one I'd be going for each way. But yeah, I would say Hurricane Lane wins it, and I just wish I had some Antipost money on.
On pedigree, he's guaranteed to stay. His dam won over 2 miles. She was a very stout stayer indeed. And I actually have a theory from Kitty Trice, who works for our bloodstock department. She thinks that because this horse is less commercially bred, i.e. there's slightly more stamina in his pedigree than Adyar, his stablemate, he could stay in training next year and we could see him in cup races. We were talking about that with Hamish and how that links in. Do you think he'd have the potential to top the current division?
Very possibly, and it's going to depend a lot on what happens to the horse we discussed earlier. But he's by Franco, and they do seem to stay well. I can't remember the name of the horse. I'm sure you can remember it in France, who Franco bred, who was a brilliant horse in the long distance races. And unfortunately, is it Call the Wind, I think?
Ah, yeah, Call the Wind. Yes. You're right. Well done.
Yeah, they stay very well, some of these Francos, which is quite surprising, actually. When Frankels were first hitting the track, we were expecting sort of really speedy horses, but they stay. So everything in his pedigree says he'll stay. He seems uncomplicated, which is half a battle as well. So he certainly could do. And it's a very interesting theory from Kitty, actually, about the commercial side of it. But exciting horse for sure. And it's nice to see these young horses coming through.
Our next port of call is the 2:45 at Leopardstown on Saturday. It is the Irish Champion Stakes. This promises to be a belter of a race. We've seen some fantastic renewals of this Group 1 in recent years, and hopefully we'll see St Mark's Basilica back from a slight setback after winning the Coral Eclipse. He's the 7-4 favourite at the moment. Tanawa, who we saw winning on reappearance at Leopardstown in Group 3, that was an effortless success. She's already proven internationally at the very top level. She's 15-8. Poetic Flair, Jim Bolger couldn't help but throw his hat into the ring here and miss that clash with Baid, of course. How will he fare up to 10 furlongs? We'll find out. He's a 7-2 chance. Mishrif at 10-1. Adabe at 14-1. I think he might miss the race. And 16-1 bar. Some of those in behind, we're not sure whether they're going to take part or not. It will depend on the ground and various other things, James. But this could be the race of the season, couldn't it?
Yeah, I really hope the big guns, the top for it, the betting especially, and Mishrif, I suppose, as well, actually, would all turn up. The Irish Free just look like really exciting horses for all different reasons. And we've seen them just really steal the show. I mean, the only horse that would be missing is Snowfall out of them. But blimey, it's going to be a cracking race, isn't it? I think the one I'd be on is Poetic Flair, actually. I think this is the sort of trip that might see the best of him. You know, I've always sort of wanted to see him over a mile and a quarter because he does everything very easily, doesn't he? He's not complicated or anything. And the way he finished off his race in France behind Palace Pier was really impressive, and it looked like he wouldn't have a problem getting extra two furlongs. St Mark's Basilica's a worthy favourite. He's been outstanding this year, but it's a cracking race, a really, really good race. And I know we discussed Gordon earlier and the timings of that. I mean, it's just such a shame that it's come this week, because this is the weekend where Irish racing's on show to the world. You know, everyone's looking into Leopardstown. It's cracking 2 days racing. And like you say, unfortunately, a lot of Irish racing's discussion point is going to be Gordon. But we'll enjoy it nonetheless. And who do you like for it, Maddie?
You're putting me on the spot there. I haven't had a deep dive into it, but I do think St Mark's Basilica could be vulnerable at the top of the market. He was very impressive in the Eclipse, but I think that was quite a falsely run race. And when you look back at the form of his wins in the Pool de Poulains, is it the French 2000 Guineas, yeah, and the Prudy Jockey Club, I'm not too impressed by that. So I feel like I almost need to see him knock it out of the park once more before I really believe the hype, especially considering he's coming up against some real hard knocking top quality horses like Mishrif and Tanawa. Poetic Flair, I'm not as confident as you that he would get the 10 furlongs. I remember when he was second in the Irish 2000 Guineas, I thought he should have won that race really, but maybe just got found out in the closing strides. But he seems to have matured since then. So he's going to add some real excitement to it. He's brought so much to this season as Poetic Flair. I think we owe him an awful lot, even though he's not won. But by sort of, I guess, process of elimination then, I think I'm coming down on Tanawa for Dermot Weld and Colin Keane. The performance she produced in the Breeders' Cup Turf last year was fantastic. I almost said magical then. That would have been cringy, wouldn't it? Getting a pun in there. But I think it's fantastic to see her back as a five-year-old. And I think this race in particular will suit her really well with that turn of foot she has. 10 furlongs down the outside at Leopardstown. She will sweep late, I hope. Anyway, James, before we let you go, we've got to get you your nap this week. You're often keeping your eye on the West Country action. You've also got some interest in the jumps action. But who is your best bet going to be this week?
Well, you've found me out there as well, because as it's the Irish Champions weekend, as it's the St. Ledger, I've clearly gone to Utoxeter on Wednesday. And the horse I quite like is, it's called Get Back, Get Back. Harry Fry's not had too many runners. I think this would be his first runner in a short while, actually. This horse, he sort of promised a lot and didn't deliver, but he's coming back to form now. He was second at Stratford behind Hang In There, who you may remember was a very good novice one time. He also sort of went off a boil, and he seemed to have come back, and that looks a nice piece of form. So I hope he's continuing to improve, and he's got a nice opportunity in the 3:05 at Utoxeter on Wednesday.
Brilliant. Best of luck, James, with that endeavour. And best of luck to you listening with all your bets this week. It's going to be an enjoyable one, and we'll be back next week to talk you through everything that happened. As usual, make sure you rate, review and subscribe to these shows. And Bruce and the team will be back on Friday to guide you through all that amazing action on track. We'll see you soon.
Racing Post Members Club is the only subscription that includes access to the Racing Post digital newspaper every day from 9 p.m. Plus, exclusive premium content, including expert tips, analysis, form study tools, and more. As a listener of the Postcast, you can enter the code POSTCAST21, that's POSTCAST21, to get 50% off your first 3 months. Head to racingpost.com, click on subscribe, and choose Get Ultimate Monthly to get started. That's code POSTCAST21.